The trip to come here began quite a few days ago. We left Venezuela in the twin engine airplane with our other pilot and flew all day and flew all night and flew half of the next day before we arrived in Illinois. I spent a few days there, and then last night about 11 o'clock I had called and activated the insurance on our van that I left parked at my parents' place. And my mother said, why don't you just sleep for a while and then just leave in the morning to drive to Nashville and catch your flight. I said, I always start early for my speaking appointments because I'm afraid something might happen to slow me down. I prefer to be early. I left at 11:30 last night, headed for Nashville. I pulled out on the main freeway and slammed right into a deer. He appeared and jumped right in front of me, a very large deer, and destroyed my radiator, and I headed for home, and 15 minutes later, by the time my needle was getting to red line, I was able to pull in, and my dad loaned me his pickup truck, and I headed for Nashville again. I was glad I didn't leave at 3 in the morning. I wouldn't have made it for the trip to be here. One of my favorite heroes is a very large man by the name of Sir James Carlyle. He happens to be the Governor General in the country of Antigua and Barbuda, one of the two sister islands in the Caribbean. Being involved in broadcast work, I was asked by the ASI, Inter-American Division Chapter, to bring our team across from Guyana. So I made a couple of flights with the airplane and brought all the equipment across and the people, and a couple years ago we filmed the ASI convention in Barbados, and we were all there that Friday night, and the Governor General came in from Antigua, and of course everybody stood as the Chief of State. He was followed with his bodyguards. He came up front, and then that began a long series of introductions, and as you would expect from a chief of state, all the things that he'd accomplished, all the things that God had done through him. And finally it was time for him to speak. And then he said, I want to invite everybody to sing, Not I, But Christ. It has nothing to do about me, he said. It's all about Christ has done. That is a hero for me. God uses us. God works through us. But the reason is because we are to reflect Christ. The person has nothing to do with it. And tonight I would like to suggest that even though sometimes my name is tied into many things that God has done, I want you to forget about that name, and I want you to think of Christ. It's all about Him. The events in this world are rapidly accelerating to a close. Everything points to His soon return. Not in next generation, in our lifetime. I'm excited because we are going to see Jesus come. I'm excited because we can be part of a movement, something that we have relaxed about. It is time to refocus, and tonight I pray that I can bring about some word pictures and share with you a vision that you might capture a clear calling in your life. This is an educational institution, and sometimes we get education so we can get a job. But that's not the reason for Christian schools. The reason for Christian education is because we have to do a job. It's all about getting a job done and accomplishing. There's a mission to be done, and we have a few hours of daylight left to do it. If we don't do it, Jesus is still going to come. But those that would have been there won't be. I was flying down across the jungles of Brazil a few weeks ago, across into the country of Bolivia, And I had with me a retired gentleman that had been raised in Bolivia. His dad had been a union treasurer, and then later on in Lima, Peru, and then moved across to Bolivia to be the mission treasurer for Bolivia in those days, when Bolivia was still a mission. He had served in administration for nearly 10 years and here in the States in educational institutions. And now that he was retired, he had offered his services to come work with us down in Bolivia. So he was coming along with me. My family was in the back. And I filed my flight plan for 7,000 feet. But then I announced that I was going to be descending. And we went lower and lower. And he said, "Why are you going so close down to the jungles?" And I said, "I want to show you something." My GPS already had it pre-programmed, and we went right to the spot. And as I came across, I dropped down to about 20 feet above the river, and I was just flying along the river, the massive Mamoré River that flows into the Amazon River. And then we came to a small ranch. I lifted up and flew around it, and I said, "You see that big tamarind tree right there?" He said, "Yes, the one right in the middle behind the house?" I said, "Yes." When I was 8 years old, under that tree, I proposed to my wife. By the time I was 8 years old, I knew who I was going to marry. I bought a little bottle of perfume, and I took it to that girl, and I said, "When I am old, I would like to, when we're older, I'd like to marry you." And Becky was my best friend, and she said, "Well, I agree." She agreed to marry me, even though a few months later I was severely disappointed when her brother came and told me that she'd use my perfume on her monkey. I thought it was all off. And for years and years I thought that was it. But then I discovered later at Southern Missionary College that the reason she used it on her monkey was because the monkey was her very favorite animal in the world, and she wanted to share her best gift with her monkey. We met again, and she came out to visit us on the farm. I was milking the cow, and she brought Kathy Lee's mother with her, Joy. And there I was sitting milking the cow, and I at that point I thought it was all off. You see, I didn't know the rest of the story, but I was milking the cow, and they both took turns milking, and I mentioned that I said, "Joy, I like your long hair." And I found out later my wife had, you know, I'd cut her hair, and she had short hair, and she immediately grew long hair. I was just trying to be a compliment. I always like long hair, and so my wife immediately grew long hair, and then her mother told my mother that the whole thing was still on. And I was immediately thrilled. And that progressed rapidly into marriage, and then 22 years of mission service now. And I thank the Lord for that wonderful privilege of sharing with a mission wife the thrill of living out on the front lines. You know, it's harder and harder now to find a job on the front lines. The money is getting tighter and tighter. There's less and less overseas calls. There's less and less local calls. You have to know somebody to get a job anymore. And so I ask myself, as I see that every year this world adds 95 million people to its population, how are we ever going to finish the work? I look at where we are and where we have to go in this generation. We can't get there from here. Not the way we're going. We reach 1 million people this year, but what about the 95 that were born? And what about the 95 million from last year and the year before? How is that going to happen? And I look at it and I realize, not if it depends on our resources, we're not going to finish. You can do all the balancing of the budget you want. You can raise all the funds you want. You can look with pride at what ASI is doing, and that's a wonderful thing. But no matter how much money we raise, can't finish a job. It's not enough. Of course, We haven't given anything yet, have we? We haven't tried. But even if we gave everything, still can't finish the job. Not enough. So how is it going to happen? It's going to happen by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. God's promises are going to have to be the guarantee for everything that happens. He has the resources. Psalms 50. If I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. For all the world is mine and the fullness thereof. We serve a God that makes diamonds and gold in his spare time. He manages the galaxies. I love Roger Morneau's reference to the monarch of the galaxies. So 6 years ago, looking at this difficulty, after working with the denomination in Peru, Bolivia, Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago, it was time to go back on permanent return. Had five kids, two girls and three adopted children. It was time to go back to the U.S. and get them an education. Should I say, come back to the U.S.? I'm thinking like I'm overseas. But then we visited the country of Guyana. Now I had been going, I've been working for the union, and I've been visiting Guyana twice a year doing their accounting work, setting up all the computer programs, helping with the audits, helping with the hospital, taking my college students with me in the airplanes around the Caribbean to set up networks, local area networks, very nice job. But I kept looking at the challenge, the mission, going through all the world and preach the gospel. And no matter how I cut the cake, I couldn't see any relation between what we were doing and the ability to finish the job. We went in to visit the Davis Indians, 200-mile trip by airplane with the conference administration near the Venezuela border of Guyana. We spent 2 weeks there. They said, we had never had a missionary in our village. The conference administration visits us once every couple of years. We haven't had a district pastor in our district for nearly 20 years. Can't you come to our village? Boy, it hit me right between the eyes. Aren't you, you know, the song that Jody sang, you know, aren't you glad you gave and I haven't given there yet? So I went back to Caribbean Union College and I told my wife, we're getting ready to ask the union for permanent return. What would happen if we took the kids and we went back for 1 year back into the jungles and just became their pastor and as registered nurses gave them medical care that they need? Well, how would we live? Well, it's about time. I'm beginning to realize it's about time that we start depending on God. If we start depending on the money that the church has, if we start depending on money that we have, it's not enough. And we're going to have to learn the lesson of total dependence someday. Why not start now? So we prayed about it. We read about George Mueller. We read about Hudson Taylor. And we decided to do an experiment with the Lord. And we did go back. My division administration counseled me, be careful, David, you're going to die out there. There's no medical care. You have no educational assistance for your kids. What are you going to eat? And all I could say is, I don't know, but that's not my problem. And we're willing to take the risk to learn. So we went there for 1 year. When I got my last paycheck, I felt like I jumped off of a cliff. No more paychecks anymore. So we went and we said, Lord, you provide for our needs. The first day we went hungry. But the next day the Indians started piling food outside our door. And we started living and eating with that. And then they started hearing about our work and they started coming in from other villages. One captain came in and he said, could you come to my village? And I said, of course. Where do you live? Not very far, only 4 days in this direction walking. All right, that's 5 days for me. And I would have to walk 5 days and come back 5 days. And then I would not have done anything. So we started praying for an airplane. And we had decided not to do any fundraising, but just to pray. And then during my morning devotions, I was reading about Moses in Genesis 14, and there was a verse missing. I was trying to figure it out. I'm sorry, in Exodus, forgive me. What am I thinking about? And here Moses stands up, they're facing the Red Sea, and Moses tells the people, "Fear not, for the Egyptians whom you see today you shall see no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." What a message of confidence. But then there's a verse missing. Verse 15, there must be something there, because the next verse 15 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, Why are you crying unto me, Moses? Tell the people to go forward." Oh, hold it a minute. Moses just told the people, "Don't fear. God will take care of you." But the next moment, he's out behind a rock crying, "Lord, help me. What am I going to tell? What am I going to do?" It doesn't say that there, but you have to assume it, because the response is, "Don't cry to me, Moses. Tell the people to go forward." So there I'm begging the Lord for an airplane and begging the Lord for an airplane. "Quit crying unto me, David, and go forward and buy an airplane." You know, money, Lord, money, you know, it takes money to buy an airplane. I used to teach flying, and I used to tell my flight students, "How many of you know what makes an airplane fly?" And somebody would raise, "The Bernoulli's theorem, the speed of the air going over the wing. It lowers the pressure and causes increased lift, and therefore it makes the plane fly." And I would say, "Wrong. The only thing that makes an airplane fly is money. Try renting an airplane and flying someday. It's money that makes an airplane fly, and that's what it takes. I don't care how much air you have, it takes money to fly." And so the Lord said, "Quit crying unto me and go buy your airplane." Now, I'm not going to talk only about airplanes and some of these things. Some of you might have the book Mission Pilot. Might have read it, so you know some of these, and I'm going to concentrate on some other things, but I just wanted to share the basis. The author of that book, Eileen Lantry, is sitting here near the front on the right, four rows back, and I want to thank her and Jay for taking the time to come down to Guyana, and all the books that she's written about Advent, about pioneers in the church. What an impression that's been. Right now, it's getting ready to roll off the press in Spanish down in Bolivia on a university press. In any case, we went to the States. We found the airplane, and the day I went to look at it, the money came in to buy it. That was the first airplane. Today there are 6 airplanes. We just bought one and sent it down to Guyana. And before I even turn it in my back, we're about ready to buy another one. And the work is expanding, and we never have money when we go forward, but somehow there's always money after you move forward. God is trying to communicate a clear message to His people. It is not about our money. It's not about our talents and skills. It's about our willingness to give everything and go forward. That's the only thing that counts, is obedience. Now, it takes everything. If you're trying to feed the 5,000, and all you got is 5 loaves and 2 fishes, you better put 5 loaves and 2 fishes in the Christ's hand. Don't come around and say, "I'm going to keep one loaf and one fish in my back pocket for me." The principle, it takes everything. But once you've given everything, you get everything. A friend, an administrator of ASI, in our North American division, was in Puerto Rico recently with me at the ASI meeting for the Inter-American division. And after I spoke there, he sat down with me and asked me, he said, "Why can't you be more kosher, David? Why do you always have to be so different? Can't you just, we don't understand. You're so far out ahead, everybody. We don't understand how you make decisions." And tomorrow, I'm going to be talking tomorrow afternoon about infinite resources and how God is willing to do that for His people and what the conditions are and how the experiment has matured in 6 years to the point where we're starting in a little Guyana, and now it's going, it's spreading so wild, the South American continent won't be able to hold it very much longer. He said, "Why can't you be more kosher?" And I said, "Because you don't have enough money." He said, "You know, we would be willing to give you more money if you would just kind of behave a little more kosher." And I said, you could give me all the money you raise at ASI, and it wouldn't be enough. I'd spend it tomorrow, and I'd come back and say, I still don't have enough. Because you can't finish the work with $2.8 million. What if you gave $5 million? What if you gave $10 million? It's not enough. There isn't enough money in the world to finish it. Only as God provides from His infinite resources can we finish the work. And it's time to finish it in our lifetime in the next few months. Now, I prefer to say months instead of years, because some of you might say, years, 40. No, not like the young people would say. There isn't 40 years left. We're talking a few months of Earth's history. Well, it might be 12, it might be 24, it might be 36, I don't know, but we're talking months. The night cometh when no man can work, and we're looking right at the night. It's just about ready to strike midnight, and we have a few months left to work. So therefore, if we're going to do that, we've got to have another mindset. We have to think totally different than we've ever thought before. As I was flying today, I was reading something I want to share with you, and all of a sudden, a new thought came to me that I never thought about before. Joshua was asked to take over and conquer. And Moses died, and God is telling him, Moses, my servant, is dead, and it's time for you to go over. But look at this, verse 3, Joshua 1:3. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, future tense, that have I given unto you, past tense. God has already given the promised land to us, but it's for us to go and take it. Success is already there. We just haven't taken it yet. And I'm going to tell you why we haven't taken it yet. Gospel workers. Sister White had a dream. Gathering the fruit, page 136. She goes out with a group of people to pick berries. Everybody was chatting, occupied with each other's company, having a good time. She was out there picking berries. And she found some under the bushes, had to look for them, but they were there everywhere. And she went back and said, look what I got. I'm summarizing it. And they said, well, we couldn't find any. We were tired and hungry. So we came to the wagon and thought we would take a lunch. But I said, you brought in nothing, but you're eating up all our supplies. I cannot eat right now. I don't have time to eat, she says. I have to go pick. Their excuse was, we were tired and hungry. And then the second excuse was, we didn't think there was any. So she became tired of waiting and she went back to work. And then she came back with another bucket of berries. And then they said, we thought we would bring enough to eat and we would enjoy the recreation. They didn't go to pick berries. They went there to have a picnic. So while there's berries falling on the ground and she's trying to rescue all of them, they're having a picnic. Excuse number three is to eat. And number four, to recreation. That's why we haven't finished the work yet. We're taking too much time to eat and too much time for recreation. This country has too much to eat. It would be good if we just went overseas a little bit and had a little bit less to eat. And it also would help us to understand other people who go hungry. Guyana is the first place in the world I've ever been that I felt guilty eating. I'd fly to town, and I would eat something, and I felt guilty eating because some of my student missionaries and some of the other volunteers didn't have very much to eat. What right do I have to eat when they can't? And we young people here, I love this institution, an educational institution. It's the best age group. I love the young people. There's so much energy. And if there's one thing I want to communicate to young people, there is a job to do, and it's in God's special forces. It's not about just a regular war, it's about special forces. Unlimited checking account. Whatever it takes, you have. Just go out and do it. Just get the job done. When the government sends special forces out, they don't come back and say, well, tell me why you couldn't get the job done, do they? When they send a special group out, anything you need, you get. You get the job done, and you come back. God is looking for special forces today, and our young people are called to be special forces for God, and the older people and more mature people are called to provide support to those young people, be it in leadership I have a 77-year-old physician, female physician, that is the absolute leader for all those young people. She's out on the front lines, and she says, put me in the most isolated place you could put me. Dr. Sheila Robertson. And the young people come from our colleges and our universities to be volunteers, and they can't keep up with her. She's a tiny little thing, weighs about 97 pounds. And I say, you think you're scared? Look what she does. Come on, guys. Toe the line. What do we young people do? Hey, it's Saturday night, what do? Let's go out for pizza and let's watch a movie. We're eating or recreating. Once the Titanic started tilting the deck, there wasn't any time to shine the china. Nobody was polishing the floors. It was time to launch life rafts. That's the only thing that counted. And I would like to suggest to you that since September 11, the deck is not level anymore on this world. Everybody knows something drastic is going to happen, and money in the bank is no security at all. It's time to launch life rafts. That's the only thing that counts. And if you're busy in personal business and your whole world is running your own business or taking care of your own needs, you're in the wrong business. If you're getting an education so you can take care of yourself, that's the wrong reason. There's no time to do that anymore. The only thing that counts is launching life rafts, reaching people, mission programs, outreach programs, total dedication, special forces. There's another thing about special forces. They don't know if they're coming back again, but they go anyhow. The call God asks his people today is, will you forget about your needs? Put the needs of the world, a mission that are dying. We had a song, Jody sang a song about the key. I spent time in prison. I was hijacked. I spent time in prison. I had a 14-year sentence hanging over my head for that. What I was being accused of. I thought I would never get out. And that wonderful day, when all of a sudden, because of the medical work, they dropped the charges and they stuck a key in the door and let me out. It was my anniversary. The key. If you ever go to a village and you see people dying because a mother of five children, because she doesn't have any antibiotics. I was in Haiti some years ago, about 20 years ago. The plane that I fly, I used to fly for another organization while I was studying aviation maintenance. And I went to Haiti. And I've never seen a country that was so drowning in spiritualism. Satanism. The cook's baby disappeared. They found the baby wrapped in banana leaves, half cooked and half eaten. Halloween, just a few days ago. I don't know how God can sleep. Well, he doesn't sleep. I'm glad I could sleep. How many children and young people lost their lives at Halloween? Sacrifice. It happens all the time. There's people in darkness, desperate, don't know what to do. Even here in this country, how many teens take their life? They don't know what to do. It's the end of the rope. There's people in darkness, desperate for a little bit of light, and we have the light. We have it. And we have the resources. I would like to suggest to you that we haven't even given one-tenth of what we should be giving. Special forces give everything, even their life. And God is calling for special forces today. There's the world to conquer, and just like Joshua, it's already been given to us. It's already been promised. Success is guaranteed. All we have to do is go put our soul, of our foot on it. Wherever you put the sole of your feet, that have I already given to you. And the reason we haven't conquered the world is we haven't put the sole of our feet there yet. It's just a matter of going and doing. It's not complicated. It does take sacrifice, but good night after what Jesus has done for us. What is sacrifice? We hide from sacrifice. Have I not commanded thee, be strong and of good courage, and be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God will be with thee whithersoever thou goest. Only as we hang on to the promises of God. God said, God's word says, my God shall provide for all your needs according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. All your needs, ask and it shall be given. But we're guilty, first of all, we're guilty of seeing what we have and saying, well, no, the job can't be done, so we won't go. We try to measure success according to our resources. And secondly, even the resources we have, we don't give. We're like the servant that has one talent. We've buried it. I have a very close family member who's a very successful physician. And he didn't want to give to the church. Somehow he got disillusioned, and every once in a while he would give me something, but to make it very clear, this is not for missionary work. This is just to help you. Don't you dare use it to advance the church work. But anything that helps me helps the church, because that's my whole mission. So if he can take care of me, then I'll take care of the church. In any case, then came September 11th. I thank God for that wake-up call. Even though it was a tragic day, I thank God for that wake-up call. At least God was kind enough to let us know what's coming ahead. Then he came to me and he said, money in the bank is no security. Overnight it will be gone. What is it that you need the most? And I told him. And he gave it. All his retirement. All his savings, his accounts, he pulled the money out, popped it in God's work. First time. What a thrill. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. His heart is changing because he's putting his treasure in God's work. God has a job for each of us to do. It may be overseas, it may be here, it may be on another part of the world, but it takes everything. I was speaking at Bass Memorial Academy at the Lakes Conference camp meeting, and the conference president made a wonderful appeal. The conference even had a bunch of money they handed out. $1 bills. And all the deacons, this is seed money. Anybody who wants to take this money and invest it, and bring it back to God. They handed it out, and they came back, and they stuck a whole pile of money. Nobody wanted it. And I got indignant. And I was the speaker for the noon hour. I said, what kind of country do we live in anyhow? And you can't give money away. I said, that's God's money. All you have to do is plant it. And we won't do that? Deacons, please come forward. They all came forward. Take that money and don't you dare come back with a single dollar left. And they went passing it around. Some people took more. And finally it was all gone. And then I said, would you please give me the report on the offering that we collected? And they brought me the report. And I said, that's not enough. That's not sacrifice. The conference is trying to do some wonderful work, trying to be involved in broadcasting, trying to invest in education, and that's what we give? Deacons, go back and collect another offering, and don't you dare come back without twice that much. I don't know, the Holy Spirit got into me. I don't know if they'll ever invite me back there again, but they did collect twice that much. All I know is that when you come from the front lines, you see things differently. You see how rich we really are and increased with goods and have need of nothing. I'm not saying that you don't have the type, but I'm saying we haven't given till it hurts yet. Jesus is just about ready to come, and there's people that are drowning just within reach. It reminds me of a story I told, of an illustration. What if your wife, your daughter, your sister, maybe your brother, your father, was getting ready to get in that lifeboat, and there's a ship going down. And some wealthy person steps in and says, "Excuse me, there's already too many people in this boat, and if you get in here, I'm going to be too crowded. Don't let him in. Or don't let her in." And so, they leave your mother or your sister or your father or your brother out. The last lifeboat launches, and you found out later that they sacrificed the life of your family member just so a person could sit down more comfortably in the lifeboat. But that's what we do every time. We want to buy a toy. We want to buy something nice for us. We want to have some extra reserves. We have extra assets we don't want to get rid of. So let them drown. It's exactly the same thing. Don't you think God is indignant? If you were to live on the front lines and watch somebody die just for lack of a little antibiotic, you would be indignant too, and you'd think, "I could have prevented it." But since you don't know about it, since I don't know about it, we keep ourselves hidden from the pain of the world. We live our own life, and one of these days the whole rug is going to be pulled out from under us, and what we could have done will be too late to do. The principles that Jesus said is, "Give ye them to eat." That's an order. And he means everybody. Go into all the world and preach the gospel, at home and abroad. Secondly, he said, "You give them to eat." And the scriptures say that was to test us, to test the disciples, to see what they would say. "But Lord, even if we had 8 months of salary, we couldn't do it." Then Jesus said a very simple thing. He said, "What do you have?" Very powerful lesson. Take an inventory. What do you have? "Well, I have skills. I have energy. I can pray. I have some resources." The question is, what do you have? Okay, the next thing. Bring it here. Andrew said, "I got a young lad that has 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Bring it here." All of it. The little boy probably thought to himself, "My mother sent me this lunch, and if I give it to Jesus, what will probably happen is I'll probably go hungry. But that's okay. I can trust Jesus with my hunger." And so the little lad gave everything and accepted the risk. Did he go hungry? Nobody went hungry that day, because one person gave everything. Jesus took it, gave thanks, and multiplied. New math. It's called multiplication by division. I would like to propose to you today, young people, first of all, you may not have money, but you certainly have energy. Ask the Lord to put a clear vision. Participate with as many mission projects as you can. Go on them. Catch, get infected. And just dedicate your life. Get an education. And say, "Lord, anything I get, it's yours. Train me. Educate me. It's all yours. It's yours. I don't want to get anything for me. Just use me." And give all your heart and mind and energy to the Lord's work. My thrill, I thank the Lord over and over. Every year, in an accelerating basis, we're opening new projects. Just, you know, it took us 4 or 5 years to get started with one little school and another school and then one airplane, another airplane. And now we're adding an airplane, 2 airplanes a year. We just opened up 2 schools, one in Bolivia and another one in Venezuela, just in the last month. What does that mean? That means when young people come to me and say, "I want to be a student missionary," I got a place for them. I didn't have before. And when a professional comes to me and says, "A doctor, a dentist, where can I work?" We just bought an airplane to open up a new medical program. It's all yours. I grew up in Bolivia, and I'll tell you what, the Adventist church was a minority. It still is. The local church controlled everything. And yes, you can work. But you're still working under a kind of a difficult situation. But I have discovered with the medical aviation program, I really enjoy working with a monopoly. There is nobody else that can compete. All our flights are free. We don't charge a penny. The airplanes fly between 700 and 800 hours a year. They're flying constantly. Once you offer free medical care to a village, they fall in love with you. And once they fall in love with you, they ask for Bible workers. And once they have Bible workers, there's a church. It's click, click, click. And there's not a single... We don't have any competition. It's a monopoly. And I love monopolies. God is offering us the world. If we would just put the sole of our feet out there and give everything. I'm inviting the older persons. Let's go to the other extreme. Some of you that are retired. Why don't you go and show the young people what to do? Put aside some of those comforts and just go. Spend a year. Start with a month if you're scared. And just go out of the middle of nowhere. And with the experience you have and the wisdom, you can give other young people direction. Maybe you might be a project director. I love our retired people to put them in charge. They walk cautiously, but they know where they're walking. The young people have a lot of energy, but they need a little bit of direction until they become experienced. And then they lead other young people. And those of us that are in between the youth and the retired, I could say, support the others. But I don't believe that money has anything to do with it. I was in Walla Walla last year, and some lady came up to me and said, but you guys on the front lines need us at home to be making money so that you can be working. And I said, not. Money has nothing to do in God's formula. You know, there's in algebra, there's variables. God has a formula, and money is not part of the variables. Money is a constant. God already promises. He owns all the resources, and He promises what you need to get the job done. So that's a constant. The variable are the people and the opportunities. Sometimes we say, no, Lord. Listen to this, page 133. Of gospel workers. Under decision and promptness. The cause of God demands men who can see quickly and act instantaneously, and women, of course, at the right time and with power. If you wait to measure every difficulty and balance every perplexity you meet, you will do but little. That's because we don't live in a perfect world. In every battle, there's a 10 to 15 minute window of opportunity. The general that wins is the one that takes the most risk. And yet we're averse to risk as a church. We even have a department called risk management. I'm glad for risk management. I've had things stolen and insurance is paid up. But sometimes risk management runs the show. There's too much risk, we can't do it. I mean, we live in a nation where insurance runs everything. 100 years ago, there wasn't any insurance, but we've gotten used to letting insurance make the decision. If we're not insured, we can't go. After September 11, the General Conference issued a communique to all the conferences, cancel your mission trips, it's too dangerous right now. Well, there's not a single one of us that believes that tomorrow is going to be less dangerous than today. So when I met with all the General Conference people and ADRA people and everything, I said, please don't ever do that again. Next time there's a crisis, tell everybody, it's getting hotter, let's move faster. And it's going to get hotter. And it's going to be more bloodshed. We better do it now while we still can. It'll be more expensive tomorrow than today. Christian service, my little manual. Often the Christian life, page 234, is beset by dangers and duty seems hard to perform. The imagination pictures impending ruin before and bondage and death behind. Yet the voice of God speaks clearly, go forward. We should obey this command even if our eyes cannot penetrate the darkness and we feel the cold waves about our feet. It's scary. I go into a fetal position quite often at night time. And I sit there and I say, Lord, I can't. Lord, I cling to you. I'm totally weak. Impossible, Lord. We're not going to eat it. What are the missionaries are going to do? How are we going to pay the bills? And God's still small voice and promises come through. I relax and I sleep well. And then I get it all right back again. And I got to go cling to the Lord. It's the promises that have the power. Frank Gonzalez from the Voice of Prophecy in Spanish, the La Voz, was preaching. He and I were preaching at a camp meeting, and he pointed out something very important. God's word for doing something, I'm not a theologian, some of you would know the Greek better, but it's the word energeo. It comes from the word energy. When God speaks, things happen. When God's word says something, it is. As a child, you know, we might be tempted to say, look, there's a cat. And the children would look and say, just kidding. God can't do that. If God says, look, there's a cat, there is one. Because his voice, his promises, his orders instantaneously become fact. So when he says something in his word, done deal. You don't have to question it. You can cling on it, you can put your life on it, and you better put your life on it if you're going to go through the next few months ahead. And if we don't learn now, I don't think we can. You know, I always thought, I've read, if those that don't learn the lessons ahead of time will have to learn them in a very short time. I've learned that thing, you know, before, you know, we're going to have to learn under crisis. You know what? I'm convinced now, you can't learn it in a very short time. If you don't learn the lessons now, when you have an opportunity to trust in God, don't think that overnight you're going to learn it. It's too painful. It's too hard. It takes a long time for us to change and to learn to depend on God. Those who defer obedience till every shadow of uncertainty disappears and there remains no risk of failure or defeat will never obey at all. Tomorrow afternoon, I want to share with you this philosophy that I have. You can carry everything to an extreme, right? If you just take it, if you just go with it, eventually it leads somewhere drastic. And in the year 2000, I told the Lord, I've seen how you provided time after time after time. Lord, from here on, I will not say no to any project, any opportunity you give me because of money. And I've come to regret that. But I have kept my word. I have not said no to any opportunity. Over here on this side is the Bartel family. It's on the far side there, the one that has, you can see the light shining off the top of his head there. John and Sue Bartel just came back from Grenada, and there's a television studio and satellite uplink under construction in Grenada, part of our Caribbean family network. And when you think of reaching the people in the world, in the cities, you can only do it through mass media. There's no other way. The mass media. Mass media is expensive. I've been on the telephone almost constantly for a month with all the satellite people, and I didn't realize how much competition there were. They're calling me twice a day, and they keep lowering their prices, each of them fighting against each other. And finally, we selected a satellite we want, and it had the best coverage. It was just launched recently, so it had a long life. It was the most expensive, but the competition brought them all down to the same level. And then he said, David, let me fax you our most recent quote. What's your email address? gates@andrews.edu. That's A-N-D. He said, Andrews, like an Andrews University? I said, you know about Andrews University? He said, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. Here he is, a representative for Intelsat for all of Latin America, and he's a Seventh-day Adventist. God put him where he's supposed to be. If you want to reach the people in the interior, you do it with airplanes. You do it with medical work. If you want to reach the people in the city, you do it with broadcasting. And broadcasting costs big bucks. But guess what? I made a promise to the Lord. I would never look at money as an issue in making any decision. And tomorrow afternoon, I will share where that takes you and what God has done. We're already on satellite. At nighttime, out of Bolivia in Spanish, and we're going 24 hours in December. And then if one uplink wasn't enough, 3ABN has one uplink, Safe TV has one uplink. Now the General Conference has just signed a contract for an uplink. The South American Division has an uplink, and we're building two uplinks. All within 1 year. Will there be more? I don't know. I want to share some of that with you. I want to encourage you. But the time has come to see God take control himself of his work, to fund it. But it takes total commitment and special forces. May God bless you tonight. I hope you have a wonderful Sabbath rest, and I hope you rest in God's power. Sorry, one last thing. As you walk out, if you've been blessed by some of the stories, we have some previous sermons that have been taped, and like all our services that God has given us, it's free. So as you walk out, if you're interested, there's a set of three tapes from the Southern Union. I did a seminar with Pastor Lonnie Melanchenko. He did the Sabbath sermon, and I did the rest of the week. That set of three is available, and also a set of one from the Washington Conference camp meeting. So if you're interested, just pick them up, and if you want to share them with friends, you can pick up a couple. God bless.